Good morning.
Good morning.
We're going to study, maybe, I don't know if we'll get through the whole thing as usual, but we're going to study One Bright Jewel, which is a fascicle from Shobo Genzo. But before we get into it, I'd like to talk a little bit about practice, since we're all here starting session and starting to practice, realize this moment right now. So I noticed this spring when people came for Dokusan, I was saying something like, practice has two sides. One side is the entering into a very truthful place about what life is. And the other side is unraveling or dealing with our karmic life. Maybe that is akin to or likened to the two truths, the relative truth, which is dealing with your karmic existence, and the absolute truth, which is touching into that which is beyond your personal body and issues, right? Because we're all a part of this great functioning that's happening, even if we have karmic things that are going on. So they do talk about the two truths. But the funny thing is, we talk about the two truths so we can understand that they happen simultaneously. So really, they're not two. They're one. But if you say they're one, it's very hard to understand how to practice as a human being. So in order to talk about it, I'm going to talk about the two sides of practice. But I think it's good to start off with knowing that this is a non-dualistic teaching. So to separate things into two isn't really the truth. And Okamura has a wonderful metaphor, which is you can call this, what would you, the front of the hand, that's what I would call it, and the back of the hand. But they exist simultaneously as this organism of the hand. Or you could say this is a hand and these are fingers. So that's discriminative, breaking everything into pieces. And the overview is that the five fingers are actually the same as the hand. So in order for me to continue talking, I have to say, please think of it like that. That they come, the whole point of it is to see that what is occurring in this moment, be it on the karmic side, like you're involved in a story about your life, or your knees are hurting, or you're very, very happy, whether that's what's appearing, or whether nothing's appearing, a quiet's appearing, phantasmagoric magical kingdom is appearing, whatever is appearing, that is it. That is thusness, we call it, or what we're trying to focus on. What is arising in this moment? And sometimes it has the close of a karmic consciousness, and sometimes it has the close of emptiness. But it's actually describing the dynamic functioning of this moment. Okay? So with, let's start with trying to, again, trying is the wrong word. I used to just totally try. My whole life was trying. It was extremely tiring. And whenever I get into that head now, it's also very tiring trying to be better, trying to be enlightened, trying to be a good Zen student. So I'm trying not to try. Which means basically letting go and trusting all the time. And that's really a tall order. Letting go, letting go, letting go. It's all complete right here, right now. So when I talk to people outside of Sishin, I say, those are your two jobs. One job is to stay connected with the entire universal functioning that is way beyond yourself. And the other part is to directly receive your karmic consciousness and deal with it. Both of those occurring simultaneously. And you can really see it, as our minds clear, you can see it when you sit zazen. What is actually arising? And that's the entryway. That's the place you enter. And sometimes it's a pain in the knee, or sometimes it's a memory of something you haven't digested. Sometimes it's a place you've never been before. Sometimes it's silence. Sometimes it's an energetic body you've never felt. Sometimes it's the sound of the birds, right? So whatever is appearing, that's where you enter. It's hard to do that, but it's less tiring than striving. And it's really what the practice is about. These mental ideas of what we want to get out of the practice, those are just our mental ideas. They don't have very much to do with what the practice actually is, which is to live. I just heard Roshi. In the last years of Katagiri Roshi's life, he just said, just live. That was his main teaching. Just live. So what does that mean? That means you're in touch with the thusness of the moment, the truth of this moment, and the truth of this moment is both karmic and absolute, empty. It's both of them. And I don't think Buddhist practice or Zen practice, when it's done in its best way, is about negating our humanity or negating our life. I think it's about, like, with ferociousness almost, engaging with our karmic situation. I say ferociously. I think that's from my Jewish background. You could say, if you were a Lutheran, calmly, calmly engage with your life. I just realized that ferociousness is my personality. But others are very calm. But the point is, you engage. You live. So let me just talk a little bit about living or engaging with emptiness or silence or nothingness. So it's kind of hard in the beginning to think there is even such a thing, because our minds, untamed, work very, very fast, and they never stop. And we're attached or aversive to what's happening. And then from attachment or aversion, our stories continue. I hate this. That's one of my, I've been noticing how much I hate lately. And I don't think that's negative. I think it's because I'm more subtly watching my mind that I say, I hate this. It could even be losing my keys, right? Something stupid. But I see the word hate go through my mind. So that's how we suffer. Like my knee hurts. I hate this. Why am I doing this? Right? So in order to live in peace, we have to find some sanctuary. I like the word sanctuary. That is not involved with like and dislike. And I think that's why we come to Sesshin. It's a practice of finding a place in yourself that can live in the truth of the moment, be it karmic or universal, that we can live in the truth of the moment without a lot of chatter in our heads about the story about the moment. And I think Zen practice really helps you do that. And sitting practice helps you do that, and activity practice helps you do that, mindfulness practice. And we're building a sanctuary where we can go that will sustain us in the hard times of our life. When things are not going well, conditionally, you will have a built-in place to go. Zazen. And Zazen has pretty much not too much to do with what's happening in the outer circumstances. So I wrote a few things down about what I'm working with to find this sanctuary within myself. Now, I say within myself, but that's not actually correct. Because where I find this sanctuary is where I don't consider myself separate from the rest of the world. So that's a really hard one, because we're very trained to think of ourselves as a separate being. And therefore, we can find the sanctuary within us. And in a lot of religious, even in Zen, they talk about the sanctuary within or God within. And that's good. In some ways, that's what we're doing in some ways. But strictly speaking, when I really find the sanctuary, I'm interdependent. I'm interrelated with the environment. And that just lessens a lot of the stories right away. So some of the instructions about this place and I talked a little bit about relaxing, so I'm into that word, relaxing or letting go. These are rather passive words, but actually when you do them, it's not passive at all. It's like there's a tautness in your mind that has to remember to let it go, if you know what I mean. So it's not flaccid, it's, I just heard Myo-O doing that sound. She does, I can't do it like she does it, but it's kind of this tautness, but it's soft and letting, and it has to do with letting go, or what was it, resting, relaxing. So it's very hard to relax, for example, if your legs are in pain. But I found that's the only way I can get through Sesshin, if I'm having physical problems, which I'm imagining some of you are having or will have. Maybe not yet, but how to handle it for me is to totally recognize it and to just be with the sensation without any dialogue about it. Just be the thusness of that energy. And of course, I use my breath. I'm a breath practitioner, basically. And so on the exhale, every exhale, I relax with what is actually happening. I relax. And I have found if I relax on every single exhale, I can get through anything. I can get through Sesshin. I can get through childbirth. I can get through my parents dying. Whatever is in front of me, if I'm relaxing on my exhales, and through that relaxation connecting with something that's larger than myself, I can get through the trials of life, which is the gift or the treasure box of being a spiritual person. So Melarepa, he's a Tibetan, famous, said, "Rest in a natural way like a small child. Rest like an ocean without waves. Rest within clarity like a candle flame. Rest without self-concern like a human corpse. Rest unmoving like a mountain." Chris, I don't like that human corpse thing, right? But there are quite a few koans that talk about being dead like a hollow tree. So don't take it too pessimistically. Just say that's a state of really deep non-reactivity. Right? And we're kind of trying to find that place in ourselves where we don't react too much to the pain in the knee. Or for me, I don't have so much physical pain, but sometimes I have abuse survivor pain, you know, like memories or things like that. So how do I hold that, digest that, without, I think of it like my nails go into claws, like Wolverine. And I grab on to these things and make them monumental and very difficult to get through. So what would it be like for me just to have my hands like this? Still feeling what I'm feeling, but... another one I like very much for, and I'm speaking about the emptiness side of Zazen, is the, I repeat myself, but I love this unpacking of gate, gate, para gate, para som gate, bodhisva that Dan Brown gave me. Gate, gate is going beyond my thoughts. Para gate, beyond my personal identity, beyond Judith Regeer. You know, I haven't used my stick in a long time because I haven't been doshiing at clouds, and I haven't been teaching that much. And I thought when I came, I thought, oh God, what do I, should I bring my stick? Do I have to use my stick? I had a lot of stories about my stick. But as soon as I got into Sesshin and put the stick in front of me, I was so relieved. I was so relieved because this stick right in front of my eyes reminds me to go beyond my personal identity. It's not me that's giving this talk, Judith Regeer. It's not Judith Regeer giving this talk. It's not Judith Regeer aggrandizing herself by holding up a stick in front of the room. You try it when you get to be a doshi. See what it feels like. You feel totally inadequate to hold up this stick, because you know the inside of your mind, right? But when I hold up the stick, I just am remembered that my practice is to go beyond that. And if I'm able to go beyond myself, people are helped, or people learn something, or they watch you go beyond in Yiddish it would be called mishagash, your craziness, going beyond your craziness. My mother wanted me to go beyond my craziness quite a bit. He would say, you know, get over it. And I would defiantly not get over it. Parasamgate, beyond constructions of time. This was very, very important to me. And I really have only gotten it in the last 4 or 5 years. We're doing this right now. That's it. We're not doing this to be better by the end, 7 days, learning, we learn something. We're not doing this because if I keep doing this, I'll get on salary at Clouds and be a teacher. We're not doing this because, why I'm saying we're not doing this, there is no future in Buddhism. So get over it. Now is what you've got. And what I learned from Sishin is now is enough. Now is complete. Now is completely functioning. It's one bright jewel. Now. Whether I like it or not, if I go beyond my personal identity, I can see that now is it. Bodhi, he translated as awakened awareness gone beyond individual consciousness. So for a long time, what's the difference between individual consciousness and personal identity? But I think there's a subtle difference. Personal identity is my karmic consciousness. Judith Regeer, where she was born, what her neurosis is, what her fabulous parts are, you know, the whole deal about who you are, where you were born, what's your history. But individual consciousness is more about, do you actually think you're separated from the universe? Do you? That's so we're going beyond even thinking that we're a separate being. That's very existential. It's a high level understanding, but Sishin is a high level investigation. So, and Svaha, he said, ooh, ah, wow. That's all on that one. So that's relaxing into non-constructed reality, which we're very privileged we might get a taste of today. Non-constructed reality. And for me, when I get a taste of that, it's very liberating, releasing. It helps me let go, really let go of clinging to my personal story and the drama of my personal story. But in order to get to a clearer place, we have to face our karmic consciousness, which you all are, or I think probably by now you're already in it, involved in what is your story for the day or your story at the moment. And Suzuki Roshi has this wonderful phrase, beginner's mind. But listen to this description of beginner's mind. When we breathe out, we can let go of our afflictions. With the next inhale, we can start over with the clear, pure mind in one breath. For one breath, anyway, the affliction disappears. And each time it arises, it can disappear again. Over time, it may disappear altogether. So that goes back to relaxing on your exhales, letting go on your exhales, and being fresh on your inhale. And that sometimes seems far away, that kind of concentration, but I think it's possible to do zazen and be connected with your breath in such subtle detail. However, have you noticed that sometimes the whole zazen period is about a story? Or the whole morning is about a story? Or the first 3 days are about some story or other of your karmic consciousness? So we have a tendency to say, that's bad. I'm not doing this right. But I don't feel that way after doing many, 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 many sessions. That is also the bright jewel. That is what's happening in the moment. What's happening in the moment is you are digesting your life. And Katagiri Roshi often talked about digesting your life experience in zazen. This is maybe, it's a quite different in a way than Rinzai. I think Rinzai really, really focuses on tasting unconstructed reality and cutting off the karmic consciousness. But that's not the way, you know, everyone interpreted Katagiri Roshi differently. So that's not the way this head interpreted that head. And maybe I couldn't, because I spent 10 years digesting my life in Sesshin, crying and being restless and, you know. And he would just say, well, just sit there, you know, just do it. And he had a few things that really helped me. One was he had two metaphors for what was happening to me during that time, the first 10 years of doing Sesshin. One, he called it psychic vomiting, which, and I have an image of it. It doesn't come out your mouth. My energetic image is that there's this spiral thing happening while I'm sitting, and I have these stuck emotional energy things in my body. And when zazen determines it's time for that part of your body to clear out, it just rips through and throws it out. That's the way it feels to me. And all you have to do is keep an upright spine, relax on your exhales, and let it rip. And let the emotional stuff come out. And we're lucky it comes out silently, right? Nobody knows that you're a volcano or a hurricane sitting. I look at you, you look very calm, very still. But inside, you might be psychically vomiting. And that, because that is the form of the moment, that is one bright jewel. It doesn't look like a bright jewel, right? It looks like vomit. But the bright jewel is very magnanimous. Anything that appears is an expression of the functioning of life. Buddha nature, you could say. The other really nice metaphor that Katagiri had is chewing the cud. And I've talked about this before, but I like to talk about it at the beginning of Sesshin because this is sometimes what happens in Sesshin. So we go through our life and we experience many things and many suffering and many pain. And in our childhood, sometimes we don't have a sanctuary in which to endure the conditions, the outer conditions. So we stuff our emotions into our bodies. Like a cow that eats and eats and eats but can't digest what he's eating, so the cow makes it into a cud. And the cows have extra stomachs, and they put the cud in their extra stomachs. And then when they have time, they burp up the cud and digest it. And Katagiri Roshi suggested that sometimes Zazen is burping up our old undigested material from our life and digesting it. And I have found, after 40 years of sitting, that a lot of my past has been digested. So I'm not doing so much of that anymore. Mostly, for me now, it's learning how to relax with nothing. Because my ego doesn't like that either. It's like a death, really, of something. So there's always something to work with, even in the most subtle arenas. And you let it go, whatever it is, gross or subtle, you let it go. Okay, so that was all about the two sides of the now, a karmic consciousness side of the now, and the side of the now that's interdependent with everything, connected with all of life, is not name, doesn't use names, it's just thusness itself. So those two sides will be present in your Zazen, and you can receive both sides as one bright jewel. So now I'd like to go into talking a little bit about one bright jewel. So the first thing is I can't remember, he said there's seven translations. Okamura Roshi said this. There's seven translations, and he's the only one who calls it one bright jewel. All the other translations call it one bright pearl. So you might have heard of one bright pearl. So, very interesting. And the minute he said one bright jewel, I said, I don't like that. Right? Because there it is, like and dislike, so quick. I like pearls. I've always heard it as a pearl. Pearls are gorgeous, and I'm not changing my opinion. That was my first reaction. And then he continued to give a very elegant reason why he wants to change it to one bright jewel. And I'm not going to go through the whole of it, but I'll go through a little summary of what he said. A pearl is born in a clam, and it's white and round. It has a color. Okamura's understanding is that this one bright pearl, one bright jewel, is what they call, with a long history, one. It's the mani jewel, M-A-N-I, mani jewel. Now, if you call it a pearl, people don't associate it with the mani jewel because it's not the same name. And you can't understand this enormous history of the mani jewel as an expression of Buddha nature if you use the word pearl. So that's the first reason. And I'll give you a few examples of a mani jewel that's in history. But so that's one reason he changed it from pearl to jewel. The second reason, which I really liked, it's the heart of the fascicle that the jewel is transparent. It doesn't have a color. It's not white. It picks up whatever it's placed on. It becomes one with the manifestation of the moment's functioning. So, if I'm vomiting out something about, I don't know, what came to my mind is being raped, which I've had. The Mani Jewel goes right on it and makes it thusness. It doesn't care that that's a black, icky, you don't want to talk about it thing. The Mani Jewel is right there. And I actually understand that because I had a lot of gifts come out of that very terrible experience. And it's a human experience. So I'm at one with all the people who have had that experience. So it's not about, so it becomes that jewel. It becomes the jewel of grief, or it becomes the jewel of rage, or it becomes the jewel of emptiness, or it becomes the jewel of kundalini energy, or whatever is happening in this moment, the one bright jewel is there. That's a big, big difference. It doesn't have any characteristics. It takes on the characteristic of the moment. Okay. So the Mani Jewel. Well, one of the first places I know about a Mani Jewel is Jizo. Jizo holds the Mani Jewel, and it's called the wish-fulfilling jewel. And when I first heard that, I rolled my eyes and thought, oh yeah, well, I want a Can-Am motorcycle. So there. I'm not going to get one. So what do you mean, a wish-fulfilling jewel? Or, I don't want to die. Or, I want my son to get a really great job and be happy. Those are all wishes that are dependent on my personal identity. They're all dependent on time, right? They're all dependent on the ordinary view of reality. But this Mani Jewel is much different than that. It's not a wish-fulfilling jewel to get what you want, even though, and I'm not putting them down, the Namyo Renge Kyo people have that kind of built in. Do you know? If you chant for something, they say you'll get it. So, you know, and that gets corrupted to chanting for a Cadillac. But on the other hand, if you do deep spiritual practice, you do get what you want. Freedom. A release, actually, from materialistic desires. You see the deception of wanting things like that. You see that that's only going to create suffering in your life. The attachment to wanting that. So this jewel is about Dharma. It's the Dharma jewel. That if you can start to perceive life clearly, not being deceived by appearances, it does fulfill your wishes. It will allow you to have a sanctuary in the middle of a very difficult life. Every life is very difficult. Being a human is difficult. Living in the world is difficult, isn't it? Jiminy cricket, you know? Like, I feel like I really want a sanctuary to get through the presidential elections. I really want a sanctuary. You know, I'll go and vote. You know, like, whatever, this year. It's like, oh, well, okay, I'll go and vote. But where does that drag me down into hatred and anger and all and disappointment and, you know, that's the kind of world we live in. That's samsara. So we have to have a different point of view, a different sanctuary than that. So the Mani Jewel is about a different sanctuary than ordinary getting our wish fulfilled. So it's in many, many doctrines. It's also one of the things he said I liked is Indra's net. You know, all these, he draws lines, they intersect, and right at the intersection is a dot, which is a being or an object or something. And that's the Mani Jewel. All the intersected lines is the Mani Jewel. So you're the Mani Jewel, but you're the Mani Jewel because you're completely intersected with all the other Mani Jewels, right? So it's beyond personal identity, beyond time, beyond individual consciousness. And if you find this sanctuary, you have a very strong place in which to engage with the samsaric world. And that's what they call samsara turning into nirvana. In each moment, if we can see the Mani Jewel of this moment, no matter what characteristics the moment has, we have entered nirvana. And then we have to do it again, in the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. So in this type of Buddhism that we're studying, there's no concrete enlightenment. There's no concrete nirvana. There's no state you get to and hold on to. In fact, if you do that by mistake, you're called, what are you called? A demon in the black cave. Right? If you hold on, because holding on is not the functioning of change. The functioning of change is happening in every moment. So in order to participate in the function of change, you have to let go. And then you flow. And the minute you grab on, you know, I just had that with the dog. I had the dog on one of those leashes that go out. If you grab on to that leash, you get burned, right? Especially if the dog is strong and you can't. It just goes. Well, that's what I feel about holding on to something in Sesshin. If you hold on to it, you're going to get a burn. That's suffering. But in every moment, if you let it go, let it go. Pain, let it go. Pain, let it go. Or phantasmagoria, let it go. Let it go. That's what I think Zazen is about. The self is only alive in relationship to all other beings. That's the Mani Jewel of Indra's net. So when they start to talk about not one, not two, when they start to talk about relative and absolute truths coming together, a word for the coming together is one seamless reality. I like that, seamless. There's no division between ordinary and sacred. It's always happening, no matter if you like or dislike the present moment. When we ask, where does this come from, or what is this? All we can say back is, it is thus. It is thus. This moment is thus. This is it. The great assembly is one thusness. We're the great assembly. All people in the Sangha practice together as one body. To live and practice together, that is the bright jewel of peace and harmony. So in a way, Sesshin is set up for you to drop your personal identity. It's set up that way, right? First of all, we don't talk. So I really don't know what's happening with you. Now, I'm lucky because I get to talk to people, so I do know what's happening with people. But when I was a student, I never knew what was happening to someone else. And even I might say, oh, they're having a hard time. Then I talk to them, you know, 5 days later, and that wasn't true at all. Or they're an angry person, and then you find out they're a very kind person. Or I've got the hots for that person, you know, and having sexual fantasies. And then you go out, and then you go have a tea afterwards, and you think, God, I wouldn't I don't want to be with that person. So we're kind of set up to see how deceptive all those projections are. It's built into Sishin that you'll see your projections and you'll see how they deceive you, that they're deceptive. And then you can let them go. And when you let them go, you can return to the thusness of the moment. Okay, so I'm going to read from the fascicle. So the mani jewel, this jewel, it has to go beyond personal identity, time construction, individual consciousness. It breaks down time and it breaks down space. This is Buddha nature. And you can't even put a word on it. The minute you put a word on it, it's like holding the dog leash. You're going to get burned because it doesn't have a name. It's a functioning, non-conceptual function. So I'll read something from the fascicle. The timeless thusness, the timeless, so that's no construction of time, the timeless thusness of this one bright pearl is boundless. So boundless is deconstructing space, right? So in that one sentence, they deconstructed time and they deconstructed space. It is just that the entire world of the 10 directions is one bright pearl, not two and not three. So for me, that means whatever characteristic this moment has on it, that is the transparent bright jewel. It's not this moment has a bright jewel and that moment has a bright jewel and that moment is a different bright jewel. This unbounded, timeless bright jewel is always arising in what's ever in front of you. The entire body is one true Dharma eye, the true body a single phrase. The entire body is illumination. The entire body is the entire mind. When the entire body is the entire body, there is no hindrance. That's like the Prajnaparamita when it says, without fear there is no hindrance. That's a gorgeous line. A gorgeous line. When the entire body is the entire body, when your body and all bodies are interrelated, then there's no hindrance. It is gently curved and turns round and round. So that's the only sentence that I think about the pearl. Because when I think about a jewel, I usually think about a faceted jewel. And it wouldn't turn as well as a pearl. And for a number of years, I guess we must have studied this fascicle 20 years ago, and I always thought of a bowl, and you put a round marble or a pearl in a bowl, and when you go like this, it's seamless, right? Nothing obstructs the movement of the bowl and the pearl. Then there was a koan about, is it the pearl moving or the bowl moving? But we won't get into that quite yet. Maybe later in the week we can get into it. But that's how I'd like you to feel during Sesshin. Is you're just going from one moment to the next moment. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Sometimes you make a mistake, sometimes you're stellar. Sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're sad. Sometimes nothing's going on. Right? So just let it flow. And know that the structure of Sesshin will uphold you no matter what happens. And especially if you're going into a place where you've never been before, kind of state of mind you've never been, or a breath you've never been, you don't have to be afraid, because the whole body, our great assembly, will support you in letting go of your old ideas and finding out that there's a different way of perceiving reality. So at that moment when you get afraid, relax into the bosom of the Sangha or the structure of Sesshin and just let go. Let go. So this is about the gently curved and turns round and round. Therefore, while either turning around or not turning around, so that's the two. If you're turning around, there's conditions that you're not, karmic conditions. If you're not turning around, you're in perfect stillness, silence, like that. So either way, whether you're turning around or not turning around, it seems that it is the changing faces that is nothing other than a bright jewel. Just different faces of the functioning of thusness in the moment. The bright jewel has a sound and a color that teach us in this way. And it's the sound and the color of the moment's conditions, right? But the bright jewel is totally transparent and becomes the condition. Was your koan Master Maz unwell?
No.
No, that was... Oh, yeah, so that's Master Ma and Dungshan are the same. Yeah. And was it a moon-faced Buddha and a... No, okay. A different one.
It was the student going to Dungshan and saying, is there anyone who does not get ill?
Oh, so... we're going to work on the moon-faced Buddha and the sun-faced Buddha. I just wondered if it was... I knew yours had to do with illness. Fish, yeah. So, anyway, that's in this fascicle. You know, hidden in the fascicles are koans. And sometimes it's just one sentence. But that one sentence refers to a whole history dialogue of the koan. So there's one sentence in this one that has sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha, which are the two truths, right? The sun and the moon. And no matter what, you just are whichever moon it is. That's the moon you are. Whichever face it is, that's the face you are. So, okay, thank you.
May our intention equally penetrate every being.